Dear listeners, this is Consoli Finn podcast, and this time we're talking in English because we have a really special guest here from Video Games Chronicle. It's Jordan Midler. Jordan, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm afraid my Finnish is not up to par yet, but hopefully by the next time I visit Helsinki, I'll have learned a few words.
Yeah, at least the curse words. Those are the very first. So, great to have you here at the show, Jordan. First of all, basically, how are you doing at life?
I'm very well. It's a busy time. We went from Summer Game Fest directly into the Death Stranding 2 review, and also had the Switch 2 in the middle of all of that. So I've had very little time to relax, but outside of that, I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well myself also. We were talking just before we started recording that it's a first nice day in Finland at this summer. So it's 25 Celsius about, and that's has been really rare in this summer. But yeah, so basically other gaming stuff, we have a lot to talk about in this episode, and hopefully we'll have the time that it deserves to talk about Death Stranding 2 also, but of course, hopefully you're not bored with talking about Death Stranding 2. I saw that you had over 100 hour play time with that, so...
I'm still playing. I want to get the platinum. So in order to do that, you have to get 5-star with every single porter in the game, and there's a prepper, and there's 42 of them. So that is a lot. That'll be a long time. And I'm still really enjoying it, and there's still things happening in it that I didn't see during my review period. So not bored of talking about that at all.
Nice. Well, we'll get there. But first, at the beginning of the interview, I would like to get back to the beginning, as Daniel Ibertson says, the Slopes Game Room. So, Jordan, tell our readers and viewers a bit about your background. How did you end up in this line of work, at first at BBC Scotland and eventually to Video Games Chronicle?
Sure. So when I was in high school, maybe around 15 or 16, I got really invested in video game coverage, largely through the likes of IGN, via people like Greg Miller and Podcast Beyond and things like that. And that is when I decided that I thought it could be a potential career for me. Then my friends and I started a small YouTube channel, as one does in high school. That didn't do a lot, but it gave me a lot of practice about what I eventually wanted to do. Then I went off to university to do film, which I hated, but as a kind of result of that, in my fourth year, the BBC came to my university and told everyone about this new initiative that they were working on called The Social, which would be the idea that the BBC is this huge establishment platform, but The Social was homemade videos broadcast through the BBC system. So I said to them, are you interested in doing anything with games? And they looked at me like I had three heads. They were very confused about why I would want to do anything about games, how it would work. There's also issues in the UK with the BBC has to be seen as impartial, so it can't give an opinion on anything. And they thought that by reviewing games, we would be endorsing products. And I quickly made them known that that's not how it works. Thankfully, thankfully, my producer at the time really understood what I was going for, and thus I started working at the BBC for about 5 years, doing kind of opinion-based videos, some reviews. That was kind of a weekly situation. Did that for years, and then towards the end of that time, I wanted to get back into the writing side of things, because that was my first love in terms of games coverage. And that's when, on the day that the PS5 was released, I had a console to review it for the BBC, and my now boss, Andy Robinson, posted on Twitter saying, does anyone have a PS5 so they can review Demon's Souls? And I said, well, I have one, I'll do it. I'm not reviewing Demon's Souls for the BBC. And thus I started freelancing for VGC alongside working for NME and places like Tech Radar, and I did some pieces for Eurogamer. Like, it was pretty spread across, just as I was winding down my time at the BBC, And then in February of 2022, I became a full-time member of VGC, and they're stuck with me since then. So it's been 3 years now.
Nice. Like, you also got into the business like at quite a young age, if I presume correctly. Yeah. So
Think I started at the BBC, I was 21, and I turned 30 2 days ago. So I've been doing it for
congrats.
A long time. Thank you.
By the way, regarding birthdays, or do you have any special energy drink to celebrate it with?
So I'm trying to think. I don't actually have anything. The only thing I'm drinking now is like a generic White Monster, but
Good, by the way.
Yeah, I like the White Monster. They recently released one for the F1 racing driver Lando Norris that is like melon flavored, and melon isn't really a flavor profile that you get in the UK a lot. It's more of a Japanese thing, and I really like that, so that was nice. But I didn't import any fancy ones for my birthday, unfortunately.
Okay, maybe later then. So yeah, well, that sounds great. So basically, it's just in these cases, like, or in many cases, there is always luck involved, and you happen to have the PS5 that you get to review Demon's Souls, and then get things on forward with that. So it was a cool story.
It's a lot of being in the right place at the right time. I was the first person to do the video game stuff for the BBC, so I got to kind of do what I wanted, essentially. There were very few rules. I got away with a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have been doing, but it kind of grew, like, the kind of fan base from that. And then transitioning that over to more traditional games media, people come up in that game very differently. It's a lot of freelance news writing and like smaller jobs. I feel very fortunate to have gone from a really big job to another one without that kind of transitional period.
Yeah, cool. Speaking of VGC, there has been a really turbulent times with the video games journalism in these past few years. I have to ask your thoughts about on the current state of the video game journalism, since nowadays pretty much all traditional magazines in the field have disappeared or shut down completely. More and more sites like VGC, for example, rely on platforms like Patreon. And how is VGC coping with the pressures of the modern media landscape at the moment?
So it's obviously been a difficult time, basically because all games media is dictated by Google, and the changes that have happened to Google have pushed legacy sites like IGN, who have such a big size, and that's not to disparage IGN. I have a lot of friends that work at IGN and they do excellent work. However, because of the size of that site and the number of articles, Google sees it as kind of the all-knowing eye, the all-encompassing, so it will rank its answer to any question where to get this thing in Death Stranding 2. Even if our answer is more complete, IGN will be higher ranked, so that's a losing battle. Google changes their decision on a whim about how their algorithm works.
Absolutely,
so what we've done is basically say to our audience, the thing you love VGC for, the news, the podcasts, you can support that directly, and so many people have, because I think they have seen, and we've certainly written enough stories about Polygon has fired so many of its writers, and there was worries that Giant Bomb was going to close down. Like, there's, and you can name infinite amounts of sites that have actually kind of succumbed to the pressures. So that's the business that we're offering now. It's difficult because Google still, when it works, pulls in a hell of a lot of money, but we can't be reliant on something that one day may decide through no fault of our own that it doesn't want to list VGC anymore. That's happened to plenty of sites, like a full-on delisting, from which there is basically no return. So it's about community-based, fan-funded, kind of smaller media. Smaller and kind of, I wouldn't say smaller in scope, because we're still getting the big opportunities, we're still doing the same kind of coverage. It's just we are not spreading out such a wide net. We can just focus on the stuff we want to do, because we don't have to play the Google game, which is the greatest kind of highlight that we could have.
Yeah, so it is definitely hard times with the this stuff, actually, absolutely. And it's good that there is a revenue or way to get fund this stuff, because you know, even it's getting less or even more and more harder to manage with just the advert money and all that. And you were mentioning, for example, Giant Bomb. They had a really close call, so to speak, when they were about to go, or were about to get fired from the company. But then they bought the company, and now they are independent and all that. And the greatest thing is that all the money is going to the makers of this stuff. And basically, with VGC, you have also the same similar thing, that the money is going to the makers, and that's what people want, I think.
Yeah, I think that people like, in the same way that people who used to buy physical magazines presumably got kind of a thrill out of the idea that this is like direct support, I think about it in the terms of, if you go to a gig and you buy merch, like that is a great way to directly support an artist with a good chunk of money that is not like streaming, where they're getting 1,000th percentile of a cent out of that one individual stream. That's essentially how it works with views on a website as well. So we are, our merch model, if you will, is to kind of the support on Patreon and to give them exclusive content, because they're the people that are really going to appreciate it. Whereas the kind of the casual audience to VGC wouldn't, but also their contribution to the overall kind of monetary amount of money we get is so negligible that we can focus on our fans.
I'm curious about it, actually, because I VGC wasn't that familiar for me, at least until like a couple of years ago. Can you tell us that basically, because you didn't have the Patreon at first, I think. So how long did it take that basically people found out about that? Okay, this is something that I want to support. And how did it basically take that you had a following with the Patreon supporters?
So VGC was founded by Andy Robinson, kind of 2019-2020 time. He previously worked at CVG and Official Xbox Magazine in the UK. He was a veteran of games journalism, and then he left games media when CVG shut down and went to work at Playtonic. He served as one of the writers of Ukulele and Ukulele the Impossible Lair. He left that job to start VGC and kind of very quickly gained momentum, gained a following. Like VGC was supported very heavily by all publishers straight from the jump, so we didn't have any kind of I know that a lot of new outlets and a lot of kind of more independent outlets struggle to get contacts with Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo, but we didn't have any of that, so we got a bit of a jump start. And then basically Andy's method of success, which was the old school media website model, worked for years and years and years until suddenly we could read the tea leaves and see that it wasn't going to work forever. So last August we decided to put out this pitch and say we're going to do the Patreon. And the support was basically instant. There was a lot of readers and fans saying, we wish you'd done this for ages, and we were surprised that you hadn't done this before. So we've been very fortunate in that sense that we kind of got we fostered the community long before we had the Patreon. The Patreon was just a function to get everyone together, really, and to give them something to directly focus on.
Yeah, that's cool, because I also remember thinking about that it took you quite long to get to Patreon, but better late than never, they say. And so it's really, really cool that you have that now, and people have the way to support you, so that people can have the outlet that they want, or basically have like an outlet for news and all that kind of stuff that they want, and also like get something extra for subscribing for the Patreon stuff. But
essentially got to the point where VGC provides the news to most, if not all, of the biggest games podcasts in the world, so people knew who we were, and they could see the direct link of, if VGC were to go away, it would not only impact their enjoyment of VGC, but also their enjoyment of Giant Bomb podcasts and Kind of Funny and all this stuff. And
yeah, that
I was
is
actually,
true.
I was at lunch with Kind of Funny's Greg Miller a couple of years ago, and he was asking me, like, why haven't we done it yet? And he was saying, like, the support will obviously be there, and you never know until you do it.
Yeah.
We could have launched it and it totally failed, but I'm so glad we did, because it's been the complete opposite. It's been a total success.
Yeah, and I also have to admit that I'm also using VGC as a source when I'm writing news for Consolifin. So
thank you. Thank you. So
it would have been a really, really huge bummer if something would happen to VGC. Absolutely. But I have to ask also that since you are doing the stuff that you are at best, your opinion, where do you think games journalism is headed at the moment? More video, more long form like essays or something else? How do you personally feel about the rise of influencer led reporting versus traditional outlets like VGC?
Oh, well,
that's a big question, I know.
That last part's going to get me in trouble. I'll start with where I think things are going. Yeah. I think it will be a lot more smaller boutique outlets. The best example I could give you is RPG site, which is, as the name would imply, a big RPG website run by a friend of mine, Alex Donaldson, who's also on Eurogamer. He has completely cornered his niche. He employs people that are the very best and very most knowledgeable about RPGs, and thus that site, which is much smaller than your traditional games media site, is the place that people will go to for the information about Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest. And I think it will be a lot more of that kind of, if not genre based, maybe game based reporting. I think that the catch all websites are kind of impractical and not what people want, especially the fact is you can't ignore the connection people have with influencers. And if you think of your favorite games influencer or favorite game like TikToker or something like that, generally they focus on one game or one genre or one specific thing. Very rarely are they across the board, and I think that's kind of how the adaptation will happen. VGC is all about news and podcasts. That's like our main thing. We do reviews and people like our reviews, but if our reviews disappeared, I don't think anyone would care. If the news went away, it would be a big problem. So I think that kind of focused approach is what's going to happen in the future, and it's already started. You see the likes of Aftermath, which is very kind of long form report based. They're doing stuff that no one else is doing. We're trying to do the same in terms of do something that people aren't doing. In terms of influencers masquerading as journalists, I have a real problem with this. I have a real problem with there's a lot of YouTubers and online personalities who will take media, be it like games media or games journalism or games reporting, and just read the entire article verbatim into a camera, offering very little insight, very little reaction, and then monetize it for hundreds of thousands of viewers on YouTube. It's like, it makes me think that audience can't actually read, like they require someone to read for them. Which I can understand the appeal of kind of a pundit or a commentator going through the news. Like I love kind of funny stuff. That's essentially what they do, but they offer their own opinions, they offer their own insight. My problem comes with when people on Twitter or like the anonymous leakers and stuff like that, when they are held at the same kind of way as actual journalists. Like I think it's really unfair when someone like Jeff Grubb, who's been consistently correct all the time, wonderful reporter, wonderful person, so I think he's been incorrect about maybe one thing, and even then it's up in the air because it could still happen.
Yeah.
But anytime he reports anything, there'll be a conflicting statement from an anonymous Reset Error user or Gaming Leaks and Rumors user, and they're herald on the same platform. So I think it's a lack of kind of media literacy that I have a problem with, being able to distinguish when a source should be trustworthy and being unable to like acknowledge an outlet's track record. Like if VGC reports on something, you should have pretty much assured confidence that we are confident enough in it that we are putting our neck on the line. If we report something and it's untrue, that gets found out immediately. But VGC was the first place to report the Metal Gear was coming back. VGC was the first place to report the Silent Hill was coming back years before it happened. Like we have the record, and a lot of these places have the record. So I was the first person to report that Days Gone was getting a remaster, unfortunately. That's my legacy. That absolutely rubbish game. But you know what I mean? Like it's on X, I don't use it anymore. I'm just on Blue Sky now, but I still have my account, so I can if news happens, I can still like go on.
Getting all the benefits from it.
Yeah, the random kind of aggregators who will take news or reviews or previews and just bullet point all of it and not source you, or source you like three tweets down and stuff like that, and they consider themselves like part of the industry. I just think it's another example of what would these people do if all of this games media went away. And those are the same people in many cases that demonize games journalism as some kind of like heinous cabal that is like against the gamer. It's like, no, mate, trust me, anyone who cares enough about games to be in games journalism and endure the terrible paycheck loves games. You can trust me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's something that also resonates with me, because at ConsoleFin we are like we're basically like enthusiast hobbyists that have been doing this for 20 years. I haven't been in here in 20 years, but I've only been like 5 years. But nevertheless, games media, we also try to provide news that we check our sources. We always like try to make it, or we are making it trustworthy as possible, that so that people who read the news can rely on them. And yeah, I totally agree with like, you know, there are audience for those kind of influencers that are basically reading for the paper, or basically quoting one-to-one with Jeff Grubb, or basically like people. I used to read like all the time back in like few years ago when Silent Hill was coming back, and it was mentioned that Nate the Hate was the one who was the first one who said it, and I'm not that went on for like years. And I listened to Spawncast, bit of a tangent here, but when they were talking about in the Spawncast, the from United States podcast, they were mentioning all the time that Nate the Hate was the one who got the first story, and I believed it at the time, but it's, you know, when things went on forward, it pretty much hit me that maybe it's not that the case.
But to be clear, just in reference to that, Nate has been correct about plenty of things. Like, Nate clearly has, I wouldn't quite lump him in with the people I have a problem with, because he clearly has sources, because he is often getting information and publishing information that we also have. So there's levels to it. I found that it's very, very easy. It would be very easy to fake being an insider in this industry. Like, it would be so easy to follow certain people and kind of examine what they say and go, I'm also hearing that. And then the one time you ask these frauds to offer their own information, always incorrect. Absolutely always.
It's no coincidence that every insider doesn't have a face in the internet, for like Nate, for example. He's the face reveal is still happening maybe sometimes, but or not. But
I think they do that because it's much easier for these companies to go after these people if they have a face. So
absolutely,
I don't blame them for that either.
Yeah, because that also like helps things that, you know, as you said, companies don't go after them and all that. But it's maybe something that you have to do so that you can get the information. But then how to rely on it and when not, it's totally completely different thing. I know that Nate has had a good track record, not perfect, but quite good. So he's probably one of the better ones.
It's also very easy in that position, and I worry about it all the time. Like, it would not be difficult to mess one of these people up if you wanted to be malicious about it, to leak them information that sounded correct and then have them report on that and it turned out to be untrue. So I think that's maybe the main difference between a journalist and someone who kind of cosplays as one. I get told so many things that I cannot repeat because I can't stand them up. I don't have two sources. Like, things that will eventually come true or eventually not come true. Like, try to think of an example that won't get someone into trouble.
Maybe Nvidia leak has been something that has, every game has been happened eventually so far, but
yeah, there's stuff like that, or there's stuff like you go, especially something like Summer Game Fest, you go out to the pub with people and you hear things, and then 2 years later that project will actually happen and you go, oh, that was actually true, maybe this bit's changed. And obviously the nature of development means that these things can change so rapidly. So if I'm to say something, it is because I know that it is happening imminently. Like, a couple of weeks ago, when the PlayStation State of Play was happening, I was told the day before by someone that it was going to happen. So I tweeted, oh, it'd be nice to have more things to react to this week. And it was announced like just after that. So it would be so, and I think about this a lot, and I'm worried that one day I will be caught out about it. So I'm extra vigilant. You could so easily fake being part of a big company and be like, oh, here's some concept art from Halo 7. Here's some details that sound realistic enough. So, yeah, I think that's maybe the main difference. I'm in no rush to prove that I know things.
Like, yeah.
I just don't care enough.
yeah. Okay, so maybe from leaking stuff to something completely different. Well, regarding reporting, you have reported extensively from the UK as your UK based, and also from Japanese game industries. And you have also visited Japan, or at least Andy has visited. I don't know if you have, but Andy at least.
I've never been. Andy's been about 25 times. Yeah. He practically lives over there.
Yeah. So basically, when you are reporting from the Japanese versus UK companies, or even United States companies, what differences do you see in how they operate or communicate with the media at the moment?
So today's actually a perfect perfect day to ask this, because we just published our preview of Donkey Kong Bonanza, which Nintendo previously had refused to confirm who was working on the game, which is now kind of their hard line in the sand, where they will say to the press, wait until the credits and you'll find out who's working on the game, which is
that's ridiculous. I never got that.
No, like... but at the preview event, they confirmed that it is the same team as Super Mario Odyssey. However, when VGC asked natural follow-up questions such as, is it literally the exact same people, who is directing it, who is, like, what, you cannot just say it is the same team, like, is it man for man the exact same team? They would not be drawn on that. So Japanese companies are very, very buttoned. They're very controlling of their message. You very rarely get to visit Japanese studios. Andy got to go to Kojima Productions recently, which was very, very rare. But I think he knew he had a really good game on his hands, so he was showing off.
Yeah.
But conversely, the UK is much more open. They're a lot more scrappy. They're a lot more willing to chat to you, a lot more informal. And in the US is also very tightly controlled. If you ask a question that in a developer interview that the PR doesn't like, they are very quick to shut you down. There's no kind of finessing about it. So I would say it's various levels of control. You can probably charm your way a bit better in the US, whereas Japanese companies stick on message. And obviously, because a lot of Japanese interviews are translated, you are getting sometimes, and I know of Japanese speakers who have interviewed Japanese developers, and the developer's answer is totally different to what the translator says.
Yeah.
So there's an extra level of... I've had so many interviews with Japanese developers that were absolutely useless, because you'll ask them a question and they'll go, we hope you look forward to the game. No, that's not what I asked them. I asked if you're doing DLC. We hope you look forward to the game. And it's like, well, why am I even here?
Yeah.
So, there's a sliding scale of informality. I actually found when I spoke to Remedy, when we were there for Firebreak, they're very chill. And obviously, like, I'm friendly with enough of that crew where it could be informal, but you can tell when developers just really want to talk about the game.
Yeah, and Mike Yatta was one of them, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Mike would talk for hours. I saw him again in LA, and I was like, man, we managed to get that podcast done. It felt like we did it in about 2 seconds, but it was about half an hour. That's the best, when you find a developer that's that kind of passionate. Obviously, Remedy's full of those people.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like in the... I haven't visited UK, but at least in Finland that I visited, the companies that are here, they are really, really open, or as open as they can be. Like, for example, Housemarque or Remedy, they are both really, really as open as they can be. And really, like...
Did you get to go to Housemarque? I'm very jealous of that.
Yeah, on May, actually. They had the 30-year-old...
Oh, for the anniversary.
Yeah, anniversary, yeah. Yeah, it was a really cool day.
Yeah,
cool day to visit. Cool day to visit.
Housemarque are maybe they're in my top five. Returnal's one of my favorite games ever. So that's on the list. I by hook or by crook, I will do something with Housemarque. Hopefully around Sarroth.
Yeah, the Saros, also people were really, really curious about Saros at that day, and everyone were saying that we cannot talk about it until X. We cannot talk about it. But we got to see, you know, the studio. It hasn't been that long since they moved to the new office in the Helsinki downtown, and I also like, or I, we also like, yeah, we will. It's really cool to see the history of your own home country, or like a gaming company that has been around for decades, and to see the history, like, because they are taking good care of their history. They have every game in the shelves, and you know, they have different versions. Like they have like some like big box version of Japanese Supreme snowboarding or something like that. It's really cool. So they're taking That's good care of the history, and they're still expanding, and really it was cool to see that it is going well with Housemarque, really well.
Them being brought into the PlayStation kind of family of studios, it was an actual pickup, because their games don't cost a hell of a lot, and they always review very well and win a lot of awards, which is good for PlayStation. They don't sell massively well, like Returnal didn't sell particularly well, but it's a great game, and it's something that they make games quite quickly, which is such a luxury in kind of modern game development. So I think they're very well placed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really hope that, you know, Returnal was, I'm bummed to admit it, but Returnal was a bit too hard for me. You know, I like the I like Ex Machina. That's my favorite game from them by far. But Returnal, I love the idea, the lore and all that. But I'm not good with, you know, I usually don't like those roguelite games. But with Returnal, I was willing to accept it, how the game works, because it was so cool. All the audiovisual style and all that. It's really, really cool, but eventually it got too hard for me, unfortunately. But I'm hoping that Saros will be something like in between, like the difficulty and the arcade or the the shooting stuff. So it looks promising.
I think that feedback will be echoed by a lot of the conversation around Saros. Finishing Returnal during the review period when there was no guides is one of the hardest things I've ever done.
It was so
unbelievable. It reminded me of finishing Elden Ring during the review period. Like, it's just the challenge when there is nothing you can possibly search up is just it's kind of unprecedented. But yes, sorry, you were talking about Finland, and as soon as I heard Housemarque, I was like, right, let's talk about
that. No worries. Actually, let's go to the Finland related questions at this time, because we're beginning with the subject. So we actually when we met in Helsinki, like in May, the same day we both went to test the FBC Firebreak at Remedy. That got me thinking that how do you see or hear the Finnish references? How they land with the Alan Wake and all these games? Because there's Ahti's one-liners that don't make any kind of sense, and the sea weather broadcast, and you know, extensive drinking and sauna stuff and all that. How does it resonate with for example with you, because you Finnish humor is a bit like British humor. It's weird and dry. Yeah. So how do you like it?
I have been a huge fan of Finland because my favorite band of all time is Him. I've been a huge fan of Finland since I discovered Him and Villavalo and Children of Bodom and all of this Finnish music. So it's kind of a natural progression from that. So whenever I find the humor and the kind of the inherent weirdness to all of that Finnish stuff really interesting, and I always, when there's a joke that I don't understand, I always try and look it up. And when I was in Helsinki for that time, I just felt very natural. Like, Finland feels a lot like Scotland. Like, they're very much sisters in the sense that it's very cold, sometimes very grey. The people were friendly but very dry and like to keep to themselves. I like that about it. And we don't have sauna, sadly. It's not a cultural touchstone over here. But the Finnish stuff I always love. I'm currently, and people have pointed this out on the podcast, I don't know if this will show on Discord, but I have a a sticker here that I'm pretty sure says sex toy shop in Finnish.
Because it
was Villavallo's dad who owns that shop, and via knowing so much about Villavallo, I knew that that was still there, so I went there during my off time in that trip and got that. And since then, a few interviews I've done, Finnish people have commented saying, do you know what that says? Do you know what that sticker means? And I'm like, yes, I do. Yes, I do, sir. So yeah, I love it. The weirder that it gets, the happier I am. That's why Alan Wake resonated, and Alan Wake 2 specifically resonated so much with me. So yeah, that stuff, the more the merrier, in my opinion.
Yeah, cool to hear, because for example Remedy, they used to have at some point they wanted to go a bit backwards with from the Finnish roots, and for example Quantum Break doesn't have like any kind of Finnish references, I think Max Payne doesn't have either, but I'm not sure, maybe there's something, not that much at least, but when they are the games were getting, or the company was getting older, and they were starting to make Control and all that, it was bit of a surprise that they were getting like all of a sudden like they're getting like more again more proud of the Finnish roots, and it was fun to see, because I always liked the because the translations from Ahti stuff, it's like they are Finnish sayings and they're like directly translated to from Finnish to English, and basically like running as a third leg, it basically means that you're running like really fast and all that, or without sense, you know. And for that kind of stuff, it doesn't make any kind of sense. So maybe Remedy is still cranking up the humor stuff with Alan Wake, I don't know, but
I think especially in Alan Wake 2, like they did a lot of stuff that was very kind of proud of their heritage, and obviously from beyond the game itself, like the collaborations with Machia to do like the merch, and they did like the flasks and stuff like that. To the point where when I was in Finland a couple of months ago, I went to Machia because I had already bought the stuff from the Alan Wake drop, and I was like, oh, this stuff's really nice. So I want more of that weird Finnish kind of Scandi humor, because it really does translate over here. I think that's why like the Alan Wake and Control seem to push Remedy into having a much more hardcore fan base of them themselves, whereas previously I feel like you could be a big Max Payne fan, but Remedy was kind of like it was out on the ether. I think obviously the much more prominent inclusion of Sam Lake also helps that, but yeah, I understand that kind of thing will continue to happen, which makes me very happy, because you don't go to Finland without chatting to some folks from Remedy, so I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next.
Yeah, the Control, I'm looking forward to Control 2, that how that's going to handle the humor aspect. Of course, there's going to be probably some darkness as always, but I always like the contrast with the dark stuff and the humor with Remedy games, at least the newer ones. So, back to maybe the reporting stuff or the journalist stuff. So I was I wanted to ask that, since you're UK based or Scotland based, what would you say to someone dreaming of, or someone that dreams of getting into the video games journalism industry in 2025?
I think you have to know what I do. And probably even the next iteration of what this job is won't exist by the time you get into it. So you have to be thinking about what it's going to be.
Absolutely,
Start on your own stuff, TikTok and YouTube, and personal blogs. I would honestly, right now, I would focus on short form, because that is clearly the way that the market is going. TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels. Start off, do what everyone does. Do impressions of your favorite types of content. Copy formats, copy the way people speak. Just let yourself get comfortable making things and editing things and making things that are crap, so you can throw them away and like improve on them. And then you'll start to develop your own voice. The saying "perfect is the enemy of good" really applies here, where if you spend too much time working on kind of this ideal version of what your game's coverage will be. By the time you're finished, no one's talking about that game. Just get stuff out. I've been doing this a long time, and there's still stuff I put out that I'm like, oh, I could do it better this way, I could do it better that way. So don't worry about that. And don't get your heart set on a version of the job that exists now. Like, when I first got into this, I wanted to be the PlayStation editor at IGN. Like, you cannot talk about how much of a bigger change there has been in the last kind of 10-15 years than that. So do that. Consume a lot of content, consume a lot of games media, and see, honestly, watch VGC's podcast and think about what you would do better, because there's always ways you could do it. Watch every kind of podcast and think about what is the thing that consistently annoys you about a podcast, and then maybe think, okay, maybe that's how I'm gonna differentiate myself. And unfortunately, one of the realities is you have to kind of engage in social media. I would say Blue Sky is kind of your friend. Get involved in conversations and promote your work and things like that. It's a slow, slow grind, and honestly, you're more likely to become a professional football player than you are an employed games journalist, because there's only about 50 of us worldwide at this point. But yeah, that's what I would say. Also, more and more people are making it their secondary thing. Like, they'll have a full-time job and do this on the side because they love doing it. Yeah. Honestly, in many ways, it's a much better way to do it, especially because games journalism pays absolutely nothing. So for most people, so if you get kind of security in your life elsewhere, that's not a bad way to go about it.
Yeah, I also have a situation when I have a day job, and I almost straight from my day job I went to sit on the computer and getting ready for this, but I love doing it, so, and that's the most important thing. I would also say to a person who is dreaming about doing this stuff for a living, it's going to be hard. It's going to be almost impossible. Because the way to monetize this is really hard, especially in Finland, because this is so the market is so little in here. But even in worldwide, it's really hard, as you said, because there's like 50 people left nowadays. So, but yeah,
you're a good example. Like, people think that doing it as a secondary job limits opportunities. Like, we've just talked about the fact that we met on the same trip to Remedy. Like, you've been to like Housemarque events and stuff like that. Like, first of all, if they limited these kind of opportunities and events to only people that were fully employed, these events would be empty, because no one would be able to go. There are huge content creators that you're probably a fan of that also have day jobs, because it's much more secure in this constantly kind of changing market. So don't worry about that element of it, because by the time you're actually in, the number of full-time jobs will be even less. It's not going in the opposite direction, so don't worry about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking that if you're doing this for a hobby, if you have the energy to do it for years, or like months or years, you have at some point you have a really nice portfolio of videos or reviews or something like that. And I really can't, you know, it really gives me so much that I still keep on doing it, but it wouldn't hurt if it would help me to get a job at some point.
Yeah,
but you know, I don't get, you know, depressed about it. You know, it's just that if you're dreaming doing this, start with the little stuff, start with the hobby stuff, and you know, train with the stuff, and you never know how it's going to be. That's at least my opinion. My opinion regarding this fine branch that we have here. But of course, this is maybe a cliche question, but regarding that, what would you be doing if you weren't working at VGC or in this field at all?
Probably in TV, some kind of writing adjacent thing, maybe television writing, kind of script writing. I would like to do that. There's still a part of me that wants to do that eventually. Like, I don't foresee myself always covering games in the same way. The only other thing I've ever wanted to be is a professional wrestler, so that's really the long and short of it. And this way, doing this job means I can still talk constantly and not have to worry about brain damage. So yeah, something like television or some kind of writing. It would be a creative pursuit, because I don't have the brain to do something that doesn't change every day. Like, I need total variation in my life. So something like that, I would say.
Yeah, like a bit of a tangent. I have to ask, what would be your wrestler name?
Oh, I always thought that... So my full name is Jordan James Midler, and I thought that James Jordan with that alliteration would be kind of a smarmy, kind of smug, arrogant character. So I feel like I'd be able to cut promos and make the audience really angry. That was, I never wanted to be a good guy, because who would want to be a good guy? Like, I want to be this arrogant, kind of shit-eating grin heel, where then the good guy comes in and throws me through a table. Like, that's the way I always wanted to do it.
I'm imagining already that somebody would shout you at the ring that James fucking Jordan.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, then I would just go like that, or get my security to go and speak to them and like tell them to quiet down. Like, I wouldn't do the fighting myself. I would pay people for that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. By the way, do you watch WWE or AEW at the moment, or?
I am a huge lifelong WWE fan. I currently feel a bit strange about it, because my favorite wrestler of all time, CM Punk, and there has been a weird kind of stuff going on with him recently. I really like AEW. I really like all of it, to be honest. I just think I can't watch it constantly, or I start to see, you know, you see the cracks when you watch it all the time. I pop in for the big events. I love the Royal Rumble. Every time it's the Royal Rumble, I'm right back there. But I still watch it a lot, if not constantly.
So Royal Rumble is still the highlight of one of the highlights of the year, because I remember when I watched it was like definitely one of the greatest things that was in the wrestling year. But I haven't been myself in the wrestling for many years, but I just remember that Royal Rumble was one of the greatest moments in the year in WWE. Yeah.
Still, the best thing in wrestling is surprise. The best thing in any kind of media is surprise, and the Royal Rumble is the only moment where that still happens. So it's on my bucket list to go to one of those someday, but the price is extortionate. So not on this wage, let me tell you that.
Yeah, and it isn't exactly that's pleasant to visit states at the moment, so I've heard, at least. So,
well, I have 2 trips to the US coming up in the next couple of months, so it's a difficult time to do that kind of international travel, but I have a visa because I'm a working journalist, so it becomes a bit less of a problem. I'm constantly on planes. I took like 60 flights last year, so thank God the Switch 2 is out, because that really makes things easier.
I'm totally 100%. Before the small break, we're getting into media corner soon, but when maybe the final question before the second part, I would say that the game of the year this year, the gaming year has been, there has been, as well, probably as always, but you know, even I feel like even this year it has been really high highs and really low lows. For example, with the Mind's Eye, we don't have to talk about that, but maybe in like, how do you feel that, I probably know your answer by now, but what is your game of the year so far? Is it Death Stranding 2?
It is Death Stranding 2, with the caveat being that I'm about halfway through Clair Obscur. I didn't end up reviewing that game, and full disclosure, a good friend of mine, Ben Starr, is a voice actor in that game, so I feel like giving any kind of critical evaluation in that is difficult, because like I've known a lot about that game for quite a while, and he obviously is a good friend of mine. So with that being said, I think that game's excellent, so I'm looking forward to playing more of that. But Death Stranding 2 has completely blown me away and overtaken all of my free time. Like, when I go and sit in my partner's house, when she's watching something, PS Portal. It's the best thing they've invented. It's the best thing Sony's done in years, that PlayStation Portal. It's fantastic.
Yeah. And, we're going to talk about Death Stranding 2 soon. But what about the second half of the year? What are you expecting the most of the second half of this year?
So I can't wait for Ghost of Yote. I thought that first game was really good, if a little bit. A lot people talk about the difference between Assassin's Creed 1 and 2. Mm. I feel like Yote will very much be the Assassin's Creed 2 to Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that a hell of a lot. Outer Worlds 2, I'm really looking forward to that as well. And Lumines Arise, the new game from the people behind Tetris Effect. Tetris Effect, I think, is the greatest game ever made. So Lumines Arise, it'll give me an excuse to excavate my PlayStation VR 2 and blow the mountains of dust off of it to play that in VR. So those are kind of my big ones. What are yours? What are your most anticipated for the end of the year?
Maybe I have to say, also, so far, my favorite is Clair Obscur. I really like Death Stranding 2 also, but Clair Obscur, sorry. Sorry about my friends. That is the game of the year so far for me. Simply because it was so surprising. You know, I expected something from the game, but I never expected it to be that good, actually. So, and I reviewed it, and it was a definite 5 stars from me. And I haven't been like, I tried to play it all the way. I played it all the way through, but I still have some things to collect there, because I also reviewed Doom, The Dark Ages, and now Death Stranding 2 took all my time. So, I still have things to do in Clair Obscur, but I feel like that is the game of the year so far for me. For the second half of the year, I am looking forward to Donkey Kong Bonanza. I actually feel like that's going to be a... I really hope that that's going to be the killer app for the Switch 2. Yote, I feel like the first one, the Tsushima, was the it was really good. The atmosphere was like one of the best that there has been ever in the games. But I feel like Tsushima was a bit too bloated, like in open world games. Open world games tend to be sometimes. But I hope that Yote would be like a bit more, not streamlined, but you know, a bit more like focused on stuff and all that.
You don't have to find 400 foxes for it to be a good game. Like I totally agree. As someone who has a compulsion to platinum games, stuff like that really gets to me. I also forgot Pokemon Legends ZA. I'm a huge Pokemon fan, so I'm looking forward to playing that, especially having played the patch for Nintendo Switch 2 for Scarlet and Violet. Yeah. The performance difference is unbelievable. So I'm looking forward to playing that, and yeah, there's a lot coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to get, because I'm also traveling inside Finland at some point, so I'm gonna get on with Yakuza Zero with Switch 2, because it has been freaking 10 years that I played that game, so it is really great to get back into it. And that's something that I'm looking forward to also. But Switch 2 is the, it really helps on those trips. But Outer Worlds, it's something that I have played. I reviewed it back in the day, but the stuff that I'm seeing from Outer Worlds 2, it seems promising, but I don't know if it's I'm looking forward to that much, or at least that as much as you. But it's looking good. So I was hoping Fable to come this year, but it was delayed next year, if I remember correctly. So
I'd heard a while, I was having a conversation with someone who is in that game, who said that when the development team saw that Microsoft had originally announced it for 2025, they laughed, because they're like, there's absolutely no way. So that is, although everything I hear about that game seems promising, I'm also looking forward to that one. But yeah, that's 2026's problem.
Yeah, nothing is coming. Basically, something that I'm really... couple of things that I now remembered. Hollow Knight Silksong, it's coming this year. I believe it when I see it, but people say that it's coming this year, actually. So that, or there has been a lot of people from the company that say that it's coming. I think it around the time that Xbox Rogue Ally is coming out or something like that.
Yeah.
At least they're saying at the moment. I don't know if it's going to get delayed, but and also what I'm looking, it's not basically that it's going to be like a game of the year contender or anything like that, but that weird Pac-Man-esque game Shadow Labyrinth, I'm excited to see how that's going to be, because I'm asked for a code for it, and it should arrive around release at some point. So I'm looking forward to see what kind of bizarre stuff is that.
I think that could be like a kind of sleeper exciting game. Like I think about that a lot. It's either going to be something that people play and go, you have to play this, it's so strange, or it is just kind of crap. So I'm also interested in that. That's on my list too, to check out.
Yeah, the trailers look so weird that I just thought that I have to play this. So yeah, but that's all for the first part. Quick note, as we were talking before, or the beginning of this cast, we were talking about energy drinks, and you are a fan of those. Apparently, the Finnish selection made an impression.
Oh, yes, right. I actually meant to... I'm going to go onto my Blue Sky right now and bring up the photo I posted from Finland of the copious amounts of energy drinks I was able to pick up, because someone from Remedy, who will remain unnamed, told me that they were scared for my life when I collected this amount from the supermarket. Sorry, I post a hell of a lot of absolute crap on my social media. The Finnish energy drinks such as Mad Croc, Red Devil, No Sugar Thunder Energy, Black Raspberry was excellent. If any of your listeners can track down that was an excellent energy drink. And I was on the VGC podcast, review energy drinks all the time. I'm sad that you cannot get No Sugar Thunder Energy in the UK. Oh, there was another, not an energy drink, but I believe it's called Long Drink. I think it was like a pineapple flavored kind of, it was like pineapple juice and gin.
Longer.
Yes, it was fantastic, because we ended up in a pub owned by two guys from Paisley, Scotland, which is where I'm from outside of Glasgow, and the long drinks were flowing, let me tell you. I had a sore head the next morning when I flew home, and thankfully I had a Mad Croc to pep me up on the way to Helsinki airport
to save the day.
Yeah,
even the Black Raspberry, or what was it called, the Thunder Energy one. I haven't tested that, so maybe I have to try it out.
I was stunned, because I went to, it was a supermarket kind of near the Makia store in Helsinki, kind of across the road, like in that area. And I turned the corner, and it was just floor-to-ceiling energy drinks. And I was like, this is like America. Like, you go into a gas station in America, and you expect that, because that's like it's a nightmare for... overconsumption of food and drink. But I was like, okay, Helsinki, you knew I was coming. I feel at home here.
Nice, really nice. Yeah, the home of Lonkero and energy drinks. But yeah,
I'll be back soon enough, let me tell you.
Nice, really good to know. Okay, so short intermission here. We are going to get at the edit table something away from this, and we're going to get back soon with the Media Corner, where we have recently watched and played and read something. We'll be right back. And we're back. We're back with the Media Corner. We have recently watched and played and read a lot of stuff, actually, mostly played. But since this is a video game podcast, after all, we are trying, beginning with the playing video game stuff. And joining with me is, of course, Jordan Midler. We're going to begin, as we mentioned, we're going to begin with Death Stranding 2. And you said at the beginning that you're not tired of talking about that game, even though you have played it over 100 hours and you have done a podcast about it and a lot of stuff, basically. But I feel like if I can start with the game, I feel like this is everything that sequel should be. Like it does everything better that the first one did. I feel like the horror stuff gets a bit there isn't that much horror stuff like in the first one. The second one is, it's not lighthearted by any means, but it doesn't have that much horror stuff in it. But I think I wrote in my review that this is a sequel that does its best, and it's everything to get the haters to back on its side. And I, yeah. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that for me, the first game was a game clearly made when he was grieving leaving Konami. Like, it was a game made from someone that was deeply hurt and didn't know what he wanted to do with the rest of his life, and found that suddenly all of this work he has done was no longer his and he had to start from scratch. Like, it's a much more somber and low-key game. This game feels like the product of the last 5 years of his life, where it's star-studded and it's blockbuster and it's full of like incredible visual showpieces, and it's a lot more lighthearted. There's a lot more camaraderie. Your crew on the DHV Magellan make it a much less lonely experience.
And also Dollman.
I have Dollman right here from the collector's edition, sitting on my mic.
I didn't even notice that. Now I noticed it.
Yeah. I've had him here for a couple of podcasts now, and it's just I'm hoping one day he starts speaking, but unfortunately not.
Not yet.
that's another thing.
Yeah,
they made Dollman somehow not annoying, a companion you have for the entire game and talks all the time. Like, he doesn't annoy you and he gives good insight and you can talk to him as much or as little as you want. And I think it's just a very well reasoned and paced and developed game. The changes to combat, the fact that you can approach situations virtually any way you want, the streamlining of basically everything. As you say, it feels like they've taken the criticisms of the first game very seriously, and I have very few critiques for the second game. It is so much better in virtually every way.
Mm. Yeah, I feel like the Dollman situation, it's almost that I always like wait for the, or I'm excited for the next conversation that I have with Dollman, because it is such a good, nicely written character. And really well voice acted. And as you said, it's not unheard of that somebody makes like that kind of Jiminy Cricket style of character, like not annoying or not annoying, but they have done it. They have done Dollman, a character that I was listening to the newest Giant Bombcast today, and I think Dan Reichert said something about that Dollman should have his own PSP game, like Daxter had, or like Clank had.
Secret Agent Clank.
Yeah, I would be so up for a Dollman game after this game.
Yeah, I think especially because Sam's such kind of a serious character. Like, Dollman is a good kind of is a good balance to Sam. I also thought Sam's interactions with Fragile and Rainy and Tomorrow, like the whole cast, was much better realized. It really incentivizes you to go back to the Magellan often to sleep and like get new cutscenes and to talk to more people and to do the kind of photography mini games and stuff. I noticed in your review you went for 4 stars. What were your kind of detractions from it? Because I went for the full 5.
Yeah, because we don't have half stars, and I would say that this is a 4.5-star game, but since we don't have half stars, I was wondering that should I give it 5 or should I give it 4, and basically there are some things that I'm going with my gut always if I'm going to give it 5 stars or 4 stars. This is like so in between that I was really thinking about it quite a lot. But I feel like compared to Clair Obscur, for that game I don't have any complaints. Or for this game I have that, even though it's dying or doing basically everything better than the first one or at least I think it's doing everything better than the first game. There are some things that I don't mind them, but I basically don't like. I don't like love them per se.
Yeah.
Like, it's even though there's a lot of things for me that I really love, like the the visual style and the audio. Basically, the audio is like a 6 out of 5 because the audio stuff is really great in that, and visual style as well. But I feel like it's just that it's just the style of the game. You know, at some point you feel like even though you have the option and you have the you can always approach the levels or the missions the way you want. I feel like it's not lacking, but it's still like really. I would
say, do you think?
Bit even though there's like really a whole lot of tools and all that for how to approach the missions, and I always love that. The first thing that I noticed with the game was that, or when there was like an infiltration mission, I noticed that the shooting mechanics and all that, I noticed immediately that, oh, this feels good all of a sudden. Like, it feels so much better than the first one. And even though I don't think that it would have been, there would have been like a, I would wanted to have more of those. It just feels like a game that I'm not getting like that much love from the package deliveries and all that. And
yeah.
The second thing I feel about why it's 4 stars for me is that even though it's much less jabbering, but it's still, at least there still is jabbering a lot.
Yeah.
and also the story, I feel like I'm feeling every now and then I'm feeling really dumb about the story, or I'm feeling dumb about myself regarding the story, because I have so many situations where I'm thinking that I don't get this logic behind this, like where is this coming from? And I know that they're trying to explain it as best as they could, but sometimes I feel like I like weird, but it's, you know, don't be weird for just being sake of being weird, like, you know. Like
there's a few moments where it feels like the game has to stop and Kojima comes on stage and explains the last hour to you, like with charts and diagrams. And it's, we joke about it on the podcast, like trying to explain to a normal person the difference between your ha and your ka and how that works together.
Like, what the hell are you saying?
Yeah, why Mama and Lochna are the same person, and why is Dollman a doll? Why is Tarman called Tarman? Like, you have to approach Kojima projects, especially now, with an accepting that you're going to miss so much of what's going on. I can't wait for the YouTube videos that are like Death Stranding 2 explained, where I felt like I got to the end of this and got the majority of the main beats, which obviously we won't spoil, but the overall through line I think is quite a basic story, which is good. However, what he always does is make the journey from the start to the end utterly perilous and utterly random. In many ways, a metaphor for the package delivery gameplay, where you're going up and down mountains. He sends you up and down a narrative mountain where you're going to get lost and you're going to lose everything and you're going to fall down a hill.
Yeah.
But I really get a kick out of that stuff, because it's, even if sometimes it doesn't work, and often it doesn't work, he's trying stuff and he's very confident in it, which is a very appealing factor to me. It reminds me a lot of, and actually I think Remedy pulls it off better, but a lot of Sam Lake stories have a lot of that stuff, but it's less, it feels like Sam has a really good editor, whereas Kojima has no editor.
That's the
no
thing.
Yeah,
I feel like even with Death Stranding 2, I feel like there has been an editor with this, because the story is, at least on my opinion, much better than the first one. But it's still jabbering, and it's still like really, it's not too weird, but you know, hard to follow at some or a lot of times, basically. And I hope that you don't think that I'm biased, but with Remedy stuff, I feel like there is a better editor, and there is like many times there is a logic behind those stuff, and I don't know. For some reason, with Remedy is a good example, because for some reason I can follow the logic, or at least better follow the logic there than in Death Stranding, and I'm still, you know, I don't want to be negative here. I still think that Death Stranding 2 is an amazing game, but because since there is like flaws that are really that, for me at least, they are a bit obvious, even though it's really, I like the art style, and I feel like Death Stranding is also like really art, like it is art, as at least I would say that it is really like a art project also at the same time, and I love it.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of stuff. The difference is Kojima's games are full of stuff that are weird and happen, and if you were to ask him why, it would go, I just thought it was funny. Like there's multiple dance sequences that have no context in the game. They're just stuff that Kojima thought would be a laugh, whereas all of the weirdness in Alan Wake 2 kind of serves the overall plot and the overall narrative. There's very little that is not connected. It's kind of different, obviously, and Alan Wake's like a more linear game. This is like a huge, ridiculously good looking open world. I can understand why someone would come down on a 4, but I think that I've not seen anyone say that they like the first one more than this, which I think is quite telling. You rarely get that with a sequel.
Yeah, I think I mentioned in my review that only the masochists loved the first one more than this.
Especially the PS4 version before the director's cut, which was really, really, really bad.
Yeah, I remember the struggle. Oh boy, I remember it. Because I have the director's cut, because I bought it from the sale at some point, but I didn't play that much. But I remember, like, I bought the first one I bought from when it was released. The journey was something else, man. but I have to say that the second one is really great game. And as you said, or as I said before, it's definitely a 4.5 star for me. But I'm going to blame the person who is responsible for that we don't have any half stars, because this game deserves it. But you know, it's now it's only 4. But one other thing that I have to say about the cast of characters, like Kojima is really good, like bringing people that are, you know, the interaction between the characters is basically really fun to follow. And like I love Tar Man. I think it's a funny man. And especially we talked about Dolman. He's great, absolutely fantastic. But also the new characters like Elle Fanning, Tomorrow, and was it Rainy? Rainy was the name.
Yeah, Rainy.
So yeah, they are good additions for the cast of characters, I feel.
I agree. I thought I think the game really, really picks up when they are all introduced and they're all working together. And I thought Lea Seydoux, who plays Fragile, was significantly better in this game as well. It really is excellent from that point of view. It's ridiculous to say, but like I think that Kojima should. He said in an interview with VGC that he has an idea for Death Stranding 3, but he doesn't want to make it because he wants to do other stuff. As soon as I was finished it. And obviously, we won't talk about why, but as soon as I was finished that, I was like, okay, I want to see more from these characters, like, immediately. Like, I was so happy to have more kind of small, not full-on hour-long cutscenes, but, like, little character moments between all of them. I think he's nailed it in a way that he hasn't done since, like, I don't know, like, MGS3 or something like that. Like, he's 100% really, agree. Really nailed what he wants to do.
Yeah, I feel like this is the best work. This is the best game since MGS3. Absolutely, because 4, people have mixed feelings about 4, MGS 4 and 5, and I totally understand why.
He was clearly losing his mind when he was making those games. Like, he was clearly at the absolute end of his rope trying to make both of those games. So, yeah. Death Stranding 1 was his therapy, and now he's back making like proper high quality Kojima games.
Yeah. This feels like this is really promising for the Pheasant that he's making at some point. And I don't know if OD is going to be more of an experience than a video game, but
I imagine it will be. Yeah, I think Pheasant is the next main one. I wouldn't mind if it's going to be. Why not just make Pheasant the story of Nilvana? I mean, he's got the character right there. Like, he has the concept. He so clearly wants to make more stuff with Solid Snake. Like, he clearly misses that world so much. you fly around in what is essentially a Metal Gear. Like,
yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see what Vincent is going to be. It's interesting to see. I don't know. We have a lot of other games to talk about, but maybe we should conclude with a small verdict with Death Stranding 2, that it's definitely up there for Game of the Year. It is the second best game of my year so far, because Clair Obscur is the best, and second one is this, third one is Doom the Dark Ages. I really love that one. But how do you feel about Doom the Dark Ages, by the way? Because I felt that it was the best Doom game so far from the newer ones.
I like it a lot more than Eternal. I think that it maybe I did really like it. I feel like it kind of came and went because so much other stuff was going on at that time, and it got kind of dominated in conversation by other stuff, but I really enjoyed playing through it. I didn't like the dragon stuff. I thought that was kind of a wasted opportunity. And the mech stuff is cool because you only do it once or twice and it's like bombastic and stuff like that. But the actual on the ground gameplay, excellent. Like all the open world stuff, excellent. I really liked that.
I like the more open levels. I liked a lot.
I think that's a natural kind of progression for what they do next. But yeah, in terms of my list, it is Death Stranding. And then in terms of games I've actually completed, I'm not going to put Clair Obscur on it yet. It is an absolute contender for me, but I'm literally checking VGC to see what the hell I reviewed this year because my brain's gone mush. I mean, there's been a lot of really good games, but few have really smashed it for me. I thought Monster Hunter Wilds was excellent, so was Kingdom Come 2. I was really disappointed in Night Rain. But if we're doing the Game Awards rules where it's December to December, Indiana Jones I thought was fantastic. So
yeah,
when it comes to voting this year for the Game Awards, which I'm a panel member for that, so Indiana Jones will definitely get some of my votes.
Yeah, that should be there because it didn't get the chance last year, so it should be there. Maybe onward and upward. I have to mention Gex Trilogy because it's also like it's an interesting time capsule, so to speak. I have been playing all the three games so far, and I'm writing a review about it, but it's not ready yet because I'm waiting for the patch to come also to the consoles. Have you noticed all, or I think you wrote the news article about that it's going to get the British actors after all.
Yeah, I also saw that it was removed from the Switch 2 store because it didn't work or something like that. Like, I was not a Gex person back in the day. Like, it was not my platformer of choice. From you playing it, do you feel like it's done enough? How much is it? Just a collection of the games? Any remastering done to it? Any kind of upgrades?
It's very little remastering. Basically, it's made with Carbon Engine, the engine that Modern Vintage Gamer is really famous about. Very little remastering because there is the first game has only 4:3 aspect ratio, for example. It's sharp and it's looking like the art style actually holds up really well. I was surprised to see how well it holds up with the art style, and of course the first Gex never got the UK actors. It only has Dana Gould in UK and US. But I feel like it's really a mixed bag as gaming wise. Whereas the remaster is like really bare bones. Like the Carbon Engine is doing enough, but it's not doing like something similar than, for example, Croc remaster, which had the it basically remade it from the ground up, if I remember correctly, or because at least it looked like that because it was really like really smooth widescreen and all that. With Gex, it's just that the Enter the Gecko and then Deep Cover Gecko, it's only it's widescreen and it's cropped correctly also, but it's just the PlayStation graphics and with the higher resolution, and of course there is also rewind and save states which help a lot with the game. So but it's making enough adjustments, But I noticed that with Gex Enter the Gecko, the camera is for some reason it's making me sick almost. It's really weird, like sharp turns and all that. Something is off with that camera. I don't know if it was from the original like that, but at least with the remaster, it's just really, I can play it like 30 minutes maximum and then I have to quit because it's making me nauseous. But with Deep Cover Gecko, it's better. The camera is better. It's making more like soft turns, so to speak, and also like the camera control is also better because you can adjust it with the second or the right stick instead of like just the shoulder buttons. it's doing enough stuff, but it's not. It's a remaster. Upscale remaster for the most part, but the games are fun by theirself. I feel like they, with save state, I feel like the first one is actually the best one. I like the 2D and the level design is for the most part it's really good actually in there it's good. It's not perfect, but it's interesting.
Interesting. Better than you expected, maybe?
Yeah, that's what I meant, basically, yes. Mm. It's also because Gex is a gecko, so it's not just he's going on from left to right, he can also, like, wrap from the surfaces. So, basically, like, if this is a wall, he can go onwards and upwards with this one, not just from like this, so he can grab from the wall also. So it's making this interesting stuff for the level design, definitely, but with Deep Cover Gecko, it's just that it's a decent 3D platformer, but it's not like, I feel like I liked Deep Cover Gecko as a kid, but I feel like that was also like I remember to be better. It's a definite.
Isn't that always the way with games that you played when you were younger, though?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Mm. But with Gex, I feel like. It's not the worst thing ever, you know. It has its moments, but it's hard to recommend to someone that haven't had the history, other than be like an educational trip for something for a mascot platformer from the 90s. Like, I feel like the Croc has held better the essence of, like, it was really a nice game to play, like, after all those years, because the Croc remaster made like really good choices with the camera controls, and it was more pleasant to control, like, 100%, whereas Gex is, it feels like a game from the 90s that has done some tweaks, maybe from the sale you can buy it at some point. Maybe not full price.
If I ever get the platinum for Death Stranding 2, I'll get right on that.
yeah, absolutely. We're getting close to the end of the interview, but you have to tell me about Rematch, because that is a game that has gone under my radar.
It is the most frustrating game of all time. I'm a huge football fan, so any football game I'm interested in, I play thousands of hours of FC every year.
Me too.
So this is a football game from the people behind Sifu, that karate game from a few years ago, and it is the best way to describe it, as stupid as this is Rocket League with humans. It is 5v5. Individual control football from a kind of third person behind perspective. It's very hardcore. The pitch is encapsulated by a bubble, so the ball's like bouncing everywhere, and it's all about your individual control. The people who play this game are physically incapable of passing the ball, which is just the most frustrating thing in the world, to the point where you want to tackle your own players. However, when you're actually playing with a team that wants to play and everything's on song, it's great. I think that it's very well balanced. The skill gap is like, it's substantial, but it also feels like you can learn the mechanics pretty well. It doesn't feel unfair in any way, in the ways that FC does. Like, it doesn't have any of that scripting bullshit. There's also none. I mean, I love Ultimate Team. I've played so much of it, but like the monetization aspect of Rematch is kind of different. it's a little bit basic at the moment, but their season one kicks off fairly soon. But yeah, I would highly recommend it. It's incredible to see how many people who are really burned out on the FC grind are getting into it, and how it's just taken over my TikTok at the moment. So I know that serves you things that you're kind of engaging with, but that's the game I've been playing when I have any moments away from Death Stranding, which is few and far between, to be honest, because all I want to do is play Death Stranding. I have been enjoying that.
Yeah, I was noticing, because this went totally under my radar. I was first thinking that maybe is Rematch like some sort of like a spiritual sequel to Sensible Soccer or something like that, but yeah. Apparently not. So
no, you should give it a try. It's on Game Pass, so yeah. you'll be able to try it out.
Yeah, definitely. This seems interesting in a good way. I have to try it out because I'm also like really, I still play EA Sports FC like almost daily. But I'm also like really, really fucking tired to that. So
that weekend, that was the first weekend league I've missed all season. And last weekend, and I felt great about it. It's like, I don't have to, even though it's so short compared to what it used to be. Like it used to be 40 games you had to play in a weekend, and now it's only like 10 or 15 or whatever. So I'm glad that I am freeing myself from it. However, I know in September when the new one turns up, I'll be right back into it. But such is the way it goes.
Yeah. We would. It would be great if eFootball would be good again at some point, because the competition is king when it comes to football games. Definitely. And So we are almost at the end, but maybe a quick look for the Switch stuff. You said that you're going to travel a lot during the end of the year, and so Switch stuff or Switch 2, basically, what are your like basic thoughts regarding Switch 2? Have you liked it so far?
I think the console itself is wonderful. Like, I think it's such a nice piece of technology. It feels so much better, so much heavier. The screen's really nice. However, I am missing that big game to play on it. Much like you, I'm looking forward to Donkey Kong. I wish Donkey Kong was the launch game and Mario Kart was the game coming out in July, because I feel like I would have played more of it, because I don't think Mario Kart is terribly good. So I wish I'd played more of it than I have, but every time I pick it up for any reason, mostly playing Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, I just think, how did we survive with even the OLED, which is a nice console, but like the build quality of the Switch 2 is so much better. Also, I picked up the Pro Controller. Well, Nintendo sent the Pro Controller, which is fantastic. One of the nicest feeling controllers in a long while. I just look forward to having things to play on it, you know? Donkey Kong, Metroid, Pokemon, Kirby, Air Riders. Like, there's a lot coming out this year. We'll get good stuff. It's just a bit of a... It's a launch. It was a weird launch because they could have released this with no games and it would have sold out everywhere. So obviously they didn't really care about the quote unquote launch lineup. But I'm not really all that into playing the third party games that I own on every other system and have played years ago. And so I want more Nintendo stuff for my Nintendo machine.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings also regarding the game selection, because I'm as I mentioned, I'm really looking forward to going back to Yakuza 0, because there is new stuff also with that, and even new story stuff, which I'm excited to see. But as you mentioned, well, I'm not that, you know, off with Mario Kart World. I like it, but I feel like there is problems. And with the latest update, I think there came like really a lot of problems regarding with the matchmaking or something like that. But
they took out something that people really liked, which is the most Nintendo thing ever, because people discovered a way to do traditional races and the multiplayer mode. It's a good game, and the actual racing, I think the open world is quite bad, and I think it's very underbaked, and there's no usable map. Like, it's just so kind of, it feels like an afterthought, which is not a Nintendo way of doing things.
Yeah, it almost feels like they got in a hurry making this game. Like, it feels like they invented this world stuff like a year ago, and then they wanted to implement it here as quickly as possible.
I think it was Chris Gillian in VGC was like, it feels like they came up with the conceit of going from one track to the other in the open world, and then they went, well, should we just let them drive about the entire map and not actually do anything with that. Like, I like the P-Switch challenges, but I can't find all of them because there's no map. Like, yeah. it's very strange decisions, very non-Nintendo decisions.
Yeah, what I feel like most frustrated about is that it has good ideas and the knockout stuff is great, but I feel like the potential is so much bigger, and I feel really frustrated about it because this is a launch game for the Switch 2. I was expecting a lot more from this. I know that they're going to probably make a patch 10 patches after the release, and you know, like in a couple of months they're going to, even every couple of months they're going to release a patch, and maybe a patch that doesn't delete something that people like, but something's off with that. I like the driving. I like the maps. The Rainbow Road is freaking awesome. It's like the best, almost the best Rainbow Road that I played ever with Mario Kart. But I really hope that Nintendo continues supporting the game, because something is missing, man.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, we're getting towards the end of this interview. A quick question. Tuska Festival, the heavy metal festival, was in Helsinki last weekend. Is there like a similar metal festival in Glasgow at the summer?
So not in Glasgow. We have Download in Donington in the UK, which is kind of the biggest one. There's also Bloodstock, which is also in the UK. That's kind of your heavier kind of metalcore, deathcore stuff, whereas Download's a little more mainstream. Sadly, I want to come to a Finnish metal festival with no context. I don't care who's on the bill. I just want to experience all of it. But is it Helldom or something like that? There's a festival that him played a lot, and they did a lot of live performances from. I'm trying to Helldom Helsinki. Why did it stop happening? Because it was actually organized by him. I forgot about that wrinkle. So when they split up, they stopped doing it. I think a Finnish music festival would be lovely. I just want to come back to Helsinki. Like, I was out. I spent as much time as I possibly could. Like, we were out until about 3 a.m. the night before my flight. So I want to come back. Went to the Bodum Bar. Mm-hmm. And is it Espoo or Espoo?
Espoo.
The Bodum Bar in Espoo, which is great. It's a lot of children of Bodum. So much to do. Also, not that long a flight from Scotland. And however, when we flew in, like, there was a moment where we came through the cloud line and all of Finland like opened up, like it didn't exist, and then it just all spawned in, and it was amazing. At that moment, the plane like dropped. And like my stomach, like I got butterflies in my stomach because it just completely dropped. And I was like, I'm so close to getting to Finland. Let's just not crash before the first time I get to Helsinki, please. it was one of the best trips I've had in ages. I need to come back mainly to get my raspberry energy drink, since I can't get them here.
Yeah, you have a decent bucket list now. You have a metal festival in here, a raspberry thunder energy drink, and lots of stuff. So.
Lots of Lonkero.
Yeah, lots of Lonkero. You have to try the other Lonkeros as well, not just the pineapple. So.
Definitely.
So, I'm visiting Tampere next week, and I'm going to go watch, finally, for the first time in my life, Blind Guardian from Germany. So, it's nice. That's a old band from the 80s playing music from, or lyrics from Lord of the Rings and all, you know.
Oh, nice.
So... I like power metal, and that's definitely one of my favorite bands ever. So, a lot of Blind Guardian when traveling to work and back, I'm listening that the records before the gig that is on Saturday. So, we are getting close to, at the end of the episode. First of all, a huge thank you, Jordan, that you were able to come as a guest. I appreciate it.
Of course, I had a great time. Thank you for having me.
Good. And first of all, where can people find you, and what do you got going on VGC at the moment?
Yep. You can find me on Blue Sky. I'm at Jordan Midler, M-I-D-D-L-E-R. I'm also on Instagram at the same handle. Check out VGC and patreon.com/VGC Video Games Chronicle if you're interested. This week we just put up our Donkey Kong preview. We're gonna have Tony Hawk stuff. Apart from that, thankfully it's quite quiet, so I don't have to do much work, which is excellent. That's always that's the real secret. What do you want to do when you work in games media? You want to do fuck all. So a little bit of a calm before the storm, because this summer is going to be pretty hectic. But yes, thank you very much for having me. If you were from any other country, I would say no, but my love of Finland means that I'm duty bound to appear on a Finnish podcast, so thank you very much, I appreciate it.
Nice. And yeah, it's maybe this is, as you mentioned, storm before, or like a sun before the storm, because Gamescom is also approaching on August, yeah. And that's going to be a lot of stuff. Or it has,
I'm not going. Okay. I don't have to go this year.
Yeah.
Because in August, I'm going to the Pokemon World Championships in California.
Okay.
And the week before that, I have another event in the US. So if I had to do that and then immediately go to the Cullen Mess, I was like, no, not this year.
Yeah, you get to miss that, which is good in this case, because I know that you're a big Pokemon fan, and so that's probably a great journey also to go there.
Yeah, a pilgrimage home.
Yeah. So regarding ConsoleFin podcast, you can find us on our website, www.consolefin.net. We have social media in Facebook and Blue Sky and Instagram and Threads. Question requests and all that kind of stuff, you can send all of those places. But until next time, I'm saying happy summer for you listeners, and for you, Jordan, as well. Hopefully Scotland weather will treat you well. at least as well as us in here in Finland. And well, take care and have a good year. Have a good one, and goodbye.
Yeah.